Getting your period is often a childhood moment that is seared into girls' and women's memories. And then it's common to be pretty obsessed with making sure that it doesn't cause you embarrassment, like bleeding through your clothes at school or out in public. Despite the amazing things that women's hormones make possible, think of getting pregnant, giving birth, nursing a baby, and more, being hormonal is often used to minimize women and their physical, mental, and emotional abilities. Journalist Eleanor Morgan is the author of the new book, Hysterical, Why We Need to Talk About Women, Hormones, and Mental Health. She's also training to be a psychologist. Eleanor, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, give us a brief description of what hormones actually do in the human body.
Well, it's a myth that only women have hormones. It is an essential group of chemical transmitters in men and women that do all kinds of things. So insulin is a hormone, and we know that insulin is related to our energy levels. Adrenaline, which, you know, we need to kind of do stuff. Cortisol, the stress hormone. There's plenty. And for women, there is a branch of our sex hormones, which are responsible for our reproductive processes. The main one you were mentioning in your intro, our menstrual cycle. So during our menstrual cycle, over the course of the month, if we go with a 30-day cycle, they will fluctuate in quite big spikes twice. So when we ovulate and just before we get our period. And then over the course of our life, and, you know, in pregnancy, breastfeeding, any sort of reproductive condition like endometriosis or PCOS, polycystic ovaries, and then up to menopause. Fluctuating hormones and different levels of different things can have a really marked effect on our body and our mind.
You talk a lot in your book about the many cultural ideas and values that surround girls starting to menstruate. Can you share a few of those with us?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, as you were mentioning, it, you know, brilliantly, actually, I think it's the beginning of when we sort of sense the gaze changing. I think it's the kind of the tipping point of kind of nascent adulthood and, you know, starting to bleed, even though we are made aware of it. And certainly here in the UK, you know, we're made aware of it from primary school. So I don't know what that would be for you. But when we're about 8, 9, 10, you know, we're kind of educated on what's going to happen. But I think it's that beginning of sexual maturity that comes with, you know, it comes with all sorts of social conditioning. And I think it comes with a sense of shame. I think, you know, we're kind of rigged to be ashamed of what our bodies are doing right from the beginning. You know, I've certainly felt that. I know that many of my female friends have felt that. I do think it's changing. I think as the conversation around menstruation, you know, there's lots of books out about this now and female bodies and kind of reclaiming the meaning. But I don't think it really goes away. I think there is an element, you know, it's so inherently female. It's so connected to all of this conditioning about what it means to be a menstruating woman. And I think that all sort of shifts into gear when we start having our periods. You know, we become hyper aware of what our bodies are doing. It's a big shift for sure.
Well, and it's been portrayed in various ways in pop culture as well. I think anyone who's seen the horror movie Carrie has
yes.
seen one of the more, shall we call it, memorable depictions. What
yeah.
messages do we get from pop culture about women and their hormonal lives?
Gosh, I mean, Carrie is a brilliant example. And I actually talk about that in some detail in the book. I think that the scene, I mean, I'm talking on the assumption that people listening have watched it. You know, the levels and the layers of shame, you know, that she's feeling and that are kind of being thrust upon her by people around her and her teacher is just appalling. You know, the misogyny is just astonishing. But I think it's, you know, I think it's this thing that is, like I was saying before, it's so inherently female. And I think in pop culture, I think menstruation and hormones are often used, certainly in the past, I think are used as this tool to sort, you know, it is a kind of repressive tool, and it's a way of pathologizing female, you know, women's behavior. You know, that old trope of, oh, she's on her period, or she's about to get her period, as if it's this absolute gold standard, you know, explainer for how a woman is thinking or behaving. You know, she couldn't possibly be annoyed or angry with someone's behavior, you know, on the fact of it. There has to be some inherent, you know, biological reason that this woman is behaving strangely. And I think we've seen that, you know, Carrie, there are other horror films, but, you know, just in the kind of all of the teen films that I watched growing up, you know, I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but I feel like that trope is so well worn, and I grew up with that. And I think, you know, the deep conditioning that creates is that you're constantly fighting against this idea that being quote unquote hormonal is, you know, you're sort of inherently less trustworthy or reliable, or your behavior is inherently sort of, you know, just, it is the kind of the hysterical woman mm-hmm. trope in a different form.
And it's not that long ago that I remember a fairly serious discussion of whether a woman could or should be president. And one of the things was, yeah, but if, you know, if she's hormonal and she's got, you know, basically the button for the nuclear bomb, we're all in big trouble.
God, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's just astonishing. I think actually more than anything, and on that note, I think it's a really good example to think about this. There's a whole world of psychology that, you know, critical psychology, and there's a lot of women in that category who kind of really sort of challenge the orthodoxy of, you know, past psychology, psychiatry. And there is this idea that when we are quote unquote hormonal, so premenstrual, for example, which is when we're sort of supposed to be erratic, irrational, very emotional, that actually it's sort of our hormones are a kind of truth serum, and it's actually when we have the most clarity about what is right or wrong, or, you know, morally just. And actually, I think given that we know so little precision about, you know, the exact effects of our rising and falling sex hormones, you know, there really isn't a definitive line in science, and believe me, I've looked at the literature in depth, that says, you know, a level of this hormone, progesterone, for example, inherently will make a woman, you know, more irrational or more flighty. You know, there's suggestions, but like any brain and body interaction, it's, you know, it's very difficult to be precise. So on that basis, I think I would trust a woman more than anyone to kind of have, you know, the moral compass. Yeah, but it's fascinating, you know, just you saying that is kind of course that's something that people think.
We're talking with Eleanor Morgan right now. She's the author of the new book, Hysterical, Why We Need to Talk About Women, Hormones, and Mental Health. And Eleanor, we were talking earlier that things have gotten better in a lot of ways in how girls and women view very natural processes that their bodies go through, like menstruating. Why does it matter if women aren't sharing with each other or with the males in their lives? Because I think that is still something that that we're falling down on.
I think there's lots of possible answers to that question. And I think there is this ingrained sense of, I think we've been fighting for so long to kind of rid ourselves of this, you know, chocolate hogging, howling at the moon, you know, hormonal hysterical stereotype, that I think maybe there is a sense of you don't want to be seen as that. And you spend a lot of time fighting against it to, you know, be kind of steady, you know, the kind of nurturing woman that we quote unquote should be in society. But it's fascinating, you know, when I've had conversations since the book came out, that's been one of the most common questions. And I think there is also a kind of deep shame, and I keep using the word shame because I think it's incredibly relevant to the kind of animal femaleness of all of this stuff, you know, blood, you know, our bodies being sort of leaky in a non-sexual way. You know, I think from when we're very young, we make so much effort to keep this stuff concealed. And I think that doesn't really go away. You know, it, I think it probably does to an extent. And I think now, to use a word that I don't particularly like, but I think teen girls, young women are much more woke to their, you know, to their bodies and what their bodies are doing. And I think have a lot less expectation that they should fall in line with what men expect their bodies to do, or how they should, you know, how they should be in the world. But I do think there is a, there is tension, certainly, I think, in heterosexual relationships where, you know, there's two very, very different bodies in that, you know, in that setup. One body that's doing something very, very different to the other and has this, you know, this inbuilt rhythm and fluctuations in hormones that the other just doesn't have. So I think there is, there's always a tension there. But I think it, it comes down to, you know, the ability to be compassionate and empathic. You know, if you really want to understand your partner, you will. But I think yet there's so much interesting stuff that comes up in those conversations. I've heard some very interesting things about male partner responses to certain things. But I also know, you know, my heterosexual female friends and their male partners that are incredibly understanding and, you know, really want to understand, don't want to sort of make assumptions. Yeah, it's a good question.
We continue our conversation with Eleanor Morgan. She's the author of the new book, Hysterical: Why We Need to Talk About Women, Hormones, and Mental Health. And Eleanor, I'd like now to turn to menopause. And as a woman in my early 50s, I have been astonished by what I didn't know, what I didn't know to expect, and how we are really not prepared for what we might experience. What goes on in a woman's body when we hit that stage of life?
Gosh, I mean, there's no real kind of cookie cutter set of symptoms, or I mean, there are. There's a kind of a big list of things that we know happen to lots of women. But, you know, no one woman's physiology is identical to another. So although we know, and, you know, I've become very familiar with the literature in this area, you know, the classic symptoms like hot flushes, sweating, you know, anxiety, low mood, low libido, dryness, all sorts of really rough things, you know, and I have friends that are going through this now. I think it's very hard to be completely prescriptive about it. But what I do know is that the perimenopause stage, which can begin, I mean, I have a friend who's in her late 30s who is perimenopausal. And I think that can go on for quite a while.
Years.
And for some women, yes, years. But I think for some women, it can also be very quick. If I think about my mum, my mother, she, I think the whole process was a couple of years, you know, which is fantastic. She had terrible periods her whole adult life. And I hope that my my trajectory is something like that. But it's a really, you know, on a kind of hormonal, you know, on a bodily level, it's a really fascinating but, you know, very difficult, profoundly difficult time in a woman's life. But it's, you know, our hormones are, to use a terribly scientific phrase, completely all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's not just biological. It can be very emotional as well. And I find myself wondering how much of that is hormonal and how much of that can be cultural as well.
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. I think it's no experience involving our sex hormones, you know, which are responsible for menstruation, all the rest of it. The way we feel is never just biological. And I think that's the key thing that became so apparent when I was researching this book and in my psychological training. You know, biology is never, ever, ever the full picture. You know, so many different environmental factors, all of the social conditioning we have throughout our lives about how a woman should behave emotionally, you know, keeping our emotions in check, how we should be with the people we love, with the people around us, at work. And I think when things are sort of chemically chaotic, I think we lose resilience. You know, that tends to be the explanation that makes the most sense. But I think no one could ever give you a precise answer. There are a hell of a lot of things going on, but, you know, the emotional distress of that time it's both biological, environmental, sociological, you know, it's based on so many things. And I think the key takeaway, and certainly from a clinical perspective, is how you can most self-compassionately manage your symptoms. And for some women, that will be taking HRT, and it will be like a miracle. And I've seen that, you know, I've seen that firsthand. For some women, it will be HRT and doing some really good talking therapy. Some women don't need to use HRT. You know, there isn't really, you know, there isn't really a one size fits all approach, but there are lots of options. But I think self-compassion is, God, it's just the thing that runs through all of it. If you're struggling to exercise self-compassion, I think, and you're constantly fighting against how you feel emotionally, you know, we know that that's a massive exacerbator for anxiety, depression. You know, those are clinical terms, but just general feelings of being able to cope with the people around you with difficult stuff. I mean, because I'm training as a psychologist, I'm very pro talking therapy. But I think it can really, you know, you really start to dig into why it's so difficult to be less resilient, why it's so difficult to sort of find that you can't give as much in your relationships with your family, you know, with your kids, with your colleagues.
And Eleanor, I want to jump on to bring a caller on in our last couple of minutes here. Kelly in Cascade, Wisconsin is up. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is a great topic. So my daughters are kind of in the tween years, and I'm perimenopausal. And so it's an interesting mix. And my husband grew up as one of four boys, so has really a hard time understanding us. And I grew up with all girls, so the female way of talking and relating makes a lot of sense to me. But what I'm noticing is that it feels like in this process of kind of hormonal shifts and changes, the way we communicate is very multidimensional, and it's informed by our feelings and emotions, and it expresses in, like, it's very multidimensional is the word that comes to mind versus linear. And so I think if you're trying to understand it and follow it from a linear perspective, you seem crazy.
And thank you for that call, Kelly. We're running short on time. Eleanor, in just last 15 seconds or so, talking and communicating is really key to all of this, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think the pressure gauge goes up and up and up. And I do think there is an element of truth in the fact that when women become menopausal, they sort of stop giving as much of it. And I don't know if I'm swearing on a bad time of day, but I think there is some truth in that. I think you sort of, you let go of having given and given and given, and something falls away. But yeah, talking is so, so important.
And we'll leave it there. Eleanor Morgan is a journalist and the author of the new book, Hysterical: Why We Need to Talk About Women, Hormones, and Mental Health.